the next case this morning, which is United States versus Jones. Mr. Reisman.
Thank you, Your Honors. I may please the court. My name is Andrew Reisman, and I represent the defendant appellant in this matter, Sammy Jones, Jr. Your Honors, I'd like to focus your attention on a very narrow issue on which this court could decide this matter, which is given that the cases involving coercion have very fact-intensive analysis of whether a defendant has been coerced by officers, where the court is required to look at the totality of the circumstances, and in particular is required to examine whether the defendant's mental state had any sort of bearing on the perception of coercion.
Mr. Reisman, is there any evidence in the record suggesting that Mr. Jones was suffering from paranoia or delusions at the time that he was interviewed by the postal inspector?
Your Honor, the evidence that is in the record that's undisputed is that Mr. Jones suffers from paranoia and delusions of grandeur. I do not believe there was evidence in the record one way or another about whether Mr. Jones was experiencing those feelings at the time. What there was evidence of, Your Honor, is that my client did perceive a threat from being revealed the handgun by the officers. Now, if we want
But you see, if there's no evidence that he was suffering from, you know, this mental illness, wouldn't the absence of such evidence alone support the district court's decision to deny the motion to suppress?
I would respectfully disagree, Your Honor, and here's why. The testimony in the record is that my client believed that he was being threatened by the postal inspectors when he was revealed the handgun during the course of the interrogations. There are two possibilities there. Either he reasonably believed that he was being threatened, or he was paranoid in perceiving that. In conjunction with the government's own report that my client does suffer from paranoia, I believe that the court should have analyzed whether my client's mental condition had any bearing on the coercion.
Even given the late hour at which he raised his mental condition and his failure to link that condition to his mental state during the one-hour interview, I mean, isn't that what we have to zero in on, what happened at the time of?
Well, I believe that's correct, Your Honor. And Your Honor is correct that there was, by neither side, an analysis of whether during this period of interrogation was my client experiencing paranoid delusions. I'm not sure whether or not that sort of analysis can be performed.
If you're going to finish, I want to turn to a different topic.
Even if we indulged the assumption that the district court erred in denying his motion to suppress, wasn't the evidence of Mr. Jones's guilt so overwhelming that any such error would simply be viewed as harmless?
Well, I would respectfully disagree for one principal reason, Your Honor. Critical piece of evidence, one of the critical pieces of evidence that the government attempted to elicit at trial was that in preparing for trial, the government did a fingerprint and palm print analysis of the envelopes from which Mr. Jones purportedly had stolen the articles from the mail. And that analysis revealed that there were fingerprints and palm prints on the envelopes, but that those fingerprints and palm prints were not those of my client. And so the jury, having had the benefit of a confession from my client, didn't have to consider the fact that there was somebody else's prints on the envelopes.
But then we have the American Express gift checks that he deposited at his credit union, the surveillance tape, and the eyewitness testimony. That's the problem I have. Even if we give you the confession, I mean, I think you have big problems with the evidence specifically.
Well, my client acknowledged, or would acknowledge anyway, that he was in possession of these articles. But he was convicted for theft from mail, and his contention, and this was brought forward during the interviews and so forth, was that he purchased the American Express gift check on the street from somebody. So the question is there evidence in the record that my client stole this American Express gift card from the envelope? And given that there are palm prints and fingerprints on the envelopes, and they're not my client's, they're somebody else's by the government's own analysis.
But here you've got a fellow who's on surveillance tape. He's opening up envelopes. He's removing things from the envelopes. He's putting the things that he's removing from the envelopes into his pocket.
Well, Your Honor, admittedly, that doesn't look good for my client having done something. But the videotapes, the testimony in the record was that the officer could not tell from the videotapes that it was these envelopes that my client was opening.
But later he's, caught with the contents of these envelopes that are in his possession.
Well, Your Honor...
It's kind of like a perfect case, isn't it?
Well, Your Honor, respectfully, I would say that to pull from a popular case, if it doesn't fit, it must acquit is good enough to overcome DNA evidence, then perhaps the fact that there are fingerprints and palm prints found on the envelopes that aren't my client's, absent a confession from my client's, is enough to introduce reasonable doubt. And the standard for harmlessness, Your Honor, is the reasonable doubt standard, and it's the government's obligation to establish that, not my client's, to prove that the error was harmful.
But referring to that case, I mean, this case was tried in Wisconsin, not California. So, I'm...
Well, Your Honor, I think we can't assume that a jury in Wisconsin is any more or less reasonable than one in California, as much as we might want to. And, Your Honor, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ms. Greeson.
Thank you.
Ms. Johnson.
May it please the Court, I'm Tracy Johnson, Assistant United States Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin, and I was trial counsel at the district court level. The decision of the district court should be affirmed. Looking at the totality of the circumstances, the defendant was not coerced, particularly with respect to the issue of his mental competence. There was no evidence that the defendant suffered from either paranoia or delusions of grandeur. At the time he was interviewed by the postal inspectors on May 14, 2001, and the exam, his mental competency exam, was not submitted to the court or received by the court until May 15, 2002. So there's almost an entire year period between the time that he is examined for mental competency and the time that he was interviewed by postal inspectors. With respect to the defendant's argument that this could not be deemed harmless error, the evidence presented at trial was very strong. To begin with, the American Express checks, there were testimonies from two witnesses from the credit union, one that he possessed the checks and that they were deposited into his account, another that she actually saw him sign the checks, but the signature on the back of the checks were his. With respect to count two, for Bobby Kendricks, Bobby Kendricks was not an actual individual. This was testified to at the trial court level. It was a name that was made up using one of the addresses of the postal inspectors, and it was $25 out of $100, which was placed by the postal inspectors into the mail stream because he had been suspected of stealing mail, because he was observed on May 10th as well as on May as well as later in May taking items from the mail. And finally, with respect to the third count, which was the deli butts count, in which a Kmart gift card was stolen from the Mother's Day card, that card was found on the defendant's person at the time that he was arrested. So if there are no further questions from the court, the government would rest on its submission.
Thank you, Ms.
Johnson. Thank you.
Mr. Reese, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Briefly, Your Honors, I'd just like to go back to the record in this case. What's shown from the record is that my client initially denied that he had stolen any of these articles from the mail, and it was only upon being revealed the handgun by one of the officers and another officer getting in his face, pointing within an inch of his eyes and being accused of jerking the officer's chain, that my client then changed and said, okay, you know, I agree, whatever you say. And then when the situation calmed down, my client went back to his denials. And then, again, when the handgun is revealed and the pointing again starts and the yelling again starts, my client agrees and inculpates himself at that point. This, Your Honor, is a reflection of the fact that my client was being coerced and intimidated to the point that his free will was overborne. I think, Your Honors, that in conjunction with the only evidence in the record of my client's mental state, admittedly not whether his mental state was one of paranoia within this hour, I do think that shows that my client was perceiving, whether due to paranoia or correctly perceiving, a threat from the shown handgun, and accordingly his free will was overborne. So Your Honors don't have any further questions.
Reisman, again, I want to thank you for taking the appointment in this case. You vigorously represented your client, and the court appreciates it. Thanks to both counsel.
Thank you.
Case will be taken under advisement.